Patty Pigskin with Gary Somerville in association with DraftKings.
Hello, friends. Gary Somerville, aka Patty Pigskin, in association with DraftKings. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. I hope that's the case because we took a bit of an extended summer break. It's almost fucking winter now. But we're back. We did a crossover episode with the Cover Zero podcast there a few weeks ago who were over in Boston for the summer. But it's been a while since we've done a standalone episode. It's also been a while since we've had Steve O'Rourke on the podcast. So Steve is back this week. Can't wait to have him on for a good chat. Honestly, it's going to be like a little bit of an episode of Loose Women this week. More so along the lines of chatting about some of the big juicy storylines and a little bit of gossip as well, as opposed to actual football analysis per se. But delighted to have Steve back on. Really good episode, diving into the likes of the interesting situation with the Giants quarterback room now. Also the Dolphins, who are absolutely fucking tanking for this year, and other little bits and pieces that have been dominating the NFL headlines. So episode 60, Patty Pigskin, Steve O'Rourke, let's go. Hey. Say congratulations. Work so hard, forgot how to vacation. They ain't never had the dedication. People hate and say we changing, look, we made it. Yeah, we made it. It feels like ages since I've done one of these, but it's episode 60. Our player dedication for this episode is Larry Grantham. He was a linebacker. He was born in Crystal Springs, Mississippi in 1938. He played his high school ball at his local school in Crystal Springs. He stayed in the state of Mississippi for his college career, played 3 years at Ole Miss. He played linebacker and D-end and won a share, believe it or not. So championships were actually shared back in the day, of the national championship in 1959. He was drafted twice in the second round of the AFL in 1960 by the New York Titans and in the 15th round of the NFL draft by the Baltimore Colts. He went on to play 13 seasons with the New York Titans / Jets as they became, and was a member in the 1968 World Championship Super Bowl III team, beating the other team that drafted him, the Baltimore Colts, after Broadway Joe famously guaranteed victory. He was known for wreaking havoc on opposing defenses, or offenses rather, and that earned him 5 AFL All-Star nods and 5 consecutive first-team All-AFL nominations from 1960 to 1964. And he also played 1 year in the Startup World Football League in 1974 for the Florida Blazers. He's also in the New York Jets Ring of Honor, and he's also in the AFL All-Time Team. So episode 60, this episode is dedicated to Larry Grantham, who actually passed away 2 years ago. So linebacker, New York Titans, New York Jets. Episode 60, Steve is on, so let's get cracking with Patty Pigskin. So before I get Steve on, let me ask you, is there anything better than watching football? Obviously there is. Watching football with a DraftKings lineup on the line, especially this week. DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is giving new users a free shot at over $1.5 million with your first deposit when you sign up with my code, Patty, P-A-D-D-Y. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap of 50K and see how your team stacks up against the competition. My personal pick for this week, Cowboys defense, has to be done. Going up against the Dolphins, Josh Rosen, and the Dolphins are absolutely tanking this year. They look shy on offense. So the Dallas Cowboys, nice little pick there on their defense. All new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500, some extra cash to play with this football season. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at over $1.5 million. So download the DraftKings app now. Use code PADDY, P-A-D-D-Y. New users, don't forget to enter my code to get a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit. That's code PADDY, P-A-D-D-Y, only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Every season, my season, man, as long as I'm breathing. Every season, my season, every
Every season my season, every season my season, man, as long as I'm breathing. Every season my season, man, as long as I'm breathing. Every season my season, man, as long as I'm breathing. Every season I...
So as promised, I have Mr. Steve O'Rourke back on Paddy Pigskin. It's been a while. I don't even remember when the last time it was on. You were on, Steve, but it was probably a few months ago. So how are you? And thanks very much for joining us on this late night hour in Ireland.
No, you're grand. Don't worry about it. Great to be back. It was probably around the draft maybe or something.
Probably we were on. When I had so much hope and aspiration for the New York Giants, and then all went to shite once they picked Daniel Jones at number 6.
The football season is great until the first week in September when reality crashes in and ruins it for the rest of us.
And sadly for us, that reality kicks in very, very soon for our respective franchises. That's just the way it's been over the last few years.
Yeah, well, look, sure, it's those one good years that you have. At least you got Super Bowls in your one good year. The Raiders looked like they might win a Super Bowl, and then Derek Carr goes and breaks his back. So
yeah. And the Giants are starting to. Giants fans now are teetering on the. We're teetering into Cowboy fans territory now, where they're like, "Oh, we got all these Super Bowls," but they were, 20 years ago. Like Giants fans are starting to creep into that territory. You don't want to be there.
No, it's like to go to a different sport. I spent my entire childhood laughing at Liverpool fans talking about their glory days, and as a Man United fan, and now it's like, oh, remember when we won the league 6 years ago?
it just
becomes that kind of, you just become a bore when you start talking about your history and your past as a team, and like there are no bigger bores than Cowboys fans. So.
Very true. And before we get into kicking things off, do you want to give a plug, because you mentioned there talking about the sports you used to watch when you were younger. You've done a few fantastic articles there over the last few weeks. If people haven't read them, I suggest that they do. So do you want to give a quick shout out on where they can find those articles?
If you just search for my name, Steve O'Rourke, on Medium, you should come across them. The links aren't, unfortunately, catchy enough to give out. But yeah, I suppose I took a break from the 42 this year because I'm working on a couple of things kind of outside of the sports writing space. But at the same time, I was getting these ideas about, stuff that had kind of happened to me as a kid and tying it back to what happened in the weekend's football or whatever. And so just on a Monday, maybe after the game, and because I don't have a word count and I don't have an editor telling me this is nonsense, I've got a bit more freedom to, and people seem to be enjoying it.
That's what I love about them. Like you kind of, you're going your own way, and it's clear that, like you said, nobody has a limit on the amount of words you can use and what direction you have to take it. Like you're just doing your own thing, and that's the freedom of expression is great.
Exactly, and if you can talk about Ku Klux, Hulk Hogan, and Eli Manning in one article, you're doing pretty okay, I think. So.
Brilliant. Right, on the topic of Eli Manning, the big elephant in the room is the fact that the Giants, I say finally benched him, but it is the second time over the last few years that he's been benched. Of course, he was benched for poxy Geno Smith in 2017, but he has been declared no longer the starter of the New York Giants. Because rookie and sixth overall pick Daniel Jones out of Duke, he's now taking the reins. And in fairness, I watched all the preseason games. I know, you can't take much from preseason, but there were a couple of things I enjoyed watching from Daniel Jones. I felt like he made his reads and his progressions, and once he made that read, he was throwing darts over the middle. Yeah, their second and third string defenses, totally get it. But he was showing the skill set that you would expect from someone that's been drafted so high. And the stats kind of back it up. I think it was 82% completion, 416 yards, 2 touchdowns, no wins. Now, we did have 2 turnovers. One of them was your classic rookie quarterback trying to do too much, ends up fucking fumbling the ball. It's kind of ball management. That's something he's going to learn over the next few years as a pro. But Daniel Jones is in now. So, expected? Did you expect it? I did, just a little bit early for me. But what did you think when Pat Shurmur announced that Eli was gone as a starter?
Like it was expected. I just didn't expect it would be this soon into the season.
Mm.
I thought that stretch where, you know, the Giants play the Patriots, I think, is it on Thursday Night Football?
Oh, yeah.
And then have 10 days before the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Like, that's me. Like, let Eli's last game as a New York Giant be against the team he beat in two Super Bowls. It just...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this was never going to be a winning season for the Giants.
Sure.
So, like, it's not like they were going to be contenders or anything like that. So you could give Manning the exit, I suppose, he would have deserved. For me, the biggest issue is that it's almost inevitable that's what's going to happen is he's going to come in this weekend, he's going to have a good game because, you know, you've got that kind of bounce that comes with changing things up, with the changing of the guard and all of that. But then he's going to play the exact same football as Eli did probably for the rest of the season because he doesn't have, Saquon Barkley aside, the support around him that you need as a rookie quarterback.
Mm.
Like, if Odell Beckham was still there, at least he has that safety valve. He has that kind of, you know, like Larry Fitz and Kyler Murray. Like, you know, he has an outlet there if he needs him that Jones just doesn't have. And for me, the biggest issue with Daniel Jones is nothing of his own making. The issue is where the Giants took him in the draft when they absolutely did not need to take him in that position because nobody was talking about him.
Yeah.
And while that's not his problem, it is a burden he's going to have to bear. And that's a lot of pressure to put on a quarterback that I think everyone thinks is average. Like, I don't think anyone thinks he's a bad quarterback. But I think the play from Eli Manning has been so bad that anything is going to be an improvement on that.
Yeah.
But again, you've all the issues with the surrounding talent, with the offensive line. There's more risk than there is reward to putting them in, I think. I think after the bye week or after that gap we talked about between the Patriots game and the Cardinals game, I think that would have just made much more sense.
Yeah. And like... there are people, I've seen, you know, part of Giants forums and Facebook groups and you name it, I'm in it. And I've seen some people that are still defending Eli saying, oh, it's the defense's fault. And I'll get to the defense in a minute. But I was looking at the passing map of Eli for the last two games. And I think in game one against the Cowboys, he completed two passes over 20 yards. And last week in another loss to the Bills, he completed one solitary pass over 20 yards. And if you just look at the map, it's clear it's all either check downs to Saquon or little 3 or 4 4 yard dump offs to Ingram, the tight end. So it seems to be that he's just not seeing the field deep the way he once, you know, was tossing the ball into double covers down to Mario Manningham and fucking tore down of a Super Bowl, you know. He's just not able to see those throws anymore and make those throws. So for people to still support him and say it's not all, like, yes, it's not all his fault, but it's quite clear that he's on the decline. He's easily on the back nine of his career. Probably a year or two earlier he could have been pulled out, and you know that would have been the right time. But there's a couple of reasons why I totally agree with you on Jones being in a little bit early. So I'm going to give a few reasons why I think it's a bit early for Jones. So it is week 3, like you said, the Giants aren't going anywhere fast this year. They're not going to have a winning season. Like, Jones isn't going to come in and they're going to go 14-2. It's too early for a rookie to be coming in for Eli Manning when, you know, how often do we see a rookie coming in? You're either in at the start or you're probably in. Like, when was Lamar Jackson in last year? Maybe week 7 or 8 or something like that?
Yeah, it was something like that. And it was after the bye week when he was given the chance to learn, you know.
It's very, very rare you see a rookie coming in week 3, like when the long-time starter has only got 2 games. But I just feel like another few weeks learning behind Eli, like he's only got to sit and watch Eli in 2 games. And he went up against a Cowboys team who, they gave up over 400 yards in offense. But they look like they're going to be a contender in the NFC. And then they ran into a buzzsaw with the Bills who just put up more points than we were expecting. But he hasn't really had a chance to watch Eli, you know, apart from those 2 games. It's, for me, that's not a big enough sample size for someone you want coming in to have learned a little bit behind a long-time QB like Eli. And also, to defend Eli somewhat, he's only had fucking practice squad wide receivers. Like, he hasn't had Golden Tate. He's out for the first 4 games with the whole fertility drug mishap, which I don't really understand why that's on the ban list, but I guess it's something to do with testosterone or whatever it is. You've had Sterling Shepherd, who's had a concussion. He was missing the last game. Corey Coleman, who was thought to be maybe the wide receiver three. And then all the other guys are pretty much guys that have been on the practice squad or guys that have been released by other teams. So it's not like Eloy has had the full cast of weapons at his disposal. So in my view, let Jones see the offense when it's at its full capacity, which would be with Tate, with Shepherd. Yeah. Then you have Ingram and then you have Barkley. But for me, 2 weeks, a bit too early.
Yeah, it's smacks of panic in a season where why are they panicking? Like they weren't winning anything. They weren't doing, you know, I have my issues with Dave Gettleman. I think we've spoken at length about, I just don't think he's a good GM. I think a couple of former players who've kind of played under him, including, you know, a Giants legend in Landon Collins, have kind of come out and said he's a bit of a trash human and he's not very good at his job. Mm. I think, you know, I'm a bit of a subscriber to the theory that actually maybe the Giants are doing this is not about Daniel Jones, but this is about protecting Eli's Hall of Fame case, because, you know, that loss at the weekend dropped his career record to 500. Mm. You know, the argument from going into Canton becomes a lot more difficult, I think, if he's got a losing career record. Now, that's not to say he won't start another game this season, because behind that O-line, who knows what might happen to Daniel Jones.
But I
just think that, like, if I'm trying to see why the Giants have done it now, and you know, I'm a bigger fool for trying to give them credit for anything, maybe that's what they're doing.
Yeah. So, like, to dive into the whole, which we tweeted about minutes before coming on air, conveniently enough, like, to dive into the whole Hall of Fame or not, like, if you look at his resume, two-time Super Bowl MVP, obviously stopped the undefeated season of the Patriots in 2007 with Randy Moss there. He has 362 TDs, 241 ints, and then, like you said, he's batting 500. He's 116 and 116 the win-loss column. So, like, are those numbers good enough for you to put Eli Manning in the Hall of Fame? Or are you looking at he's going in based on those two magical seasons that the Giants had and then nothing else matters?
For me, he's not even close to a Hall of Fame quarterback. And I should have teased that out a bit more and let people see. But that's just the honest truth. Let's take the reasons people always give, which are those two Super Bowl seasons, and absolutely, like, you know, thankfully, you know, stop the Patriots from having an unbeaten season. All right, like that, like,
God bless him.
We, as a football fan, we can all appreciate that.
Yeah, but he's a legend, like, in everybody's eyes, no matter what team they support, apart from the Pats.
Exactly,
everybody loves him for that.
For me, yeah, 100%. But for me, the defense was the story of both those seasons.
Sure.
He was okay in the playoffs, and he had two good throws in the Super Bowl that people remember because of the nature of those two particular throws. I don't think there was anything, like, he won MVP because it, like, I mean, unless you are shit, you're probably going to win the MVP, Super Bowl MVP, as the winning quarterback. I mean, that's just the way it goes. Like, I mean, it's the easiest thing in the world.
So what does that say about Tom Brady last year? Then that is his slot receiver, won it.
Yeah, well, look, there's an argument that if you're the same criteria that people are using to put Eli into the Hall of Fame would get Julian Edelman into the Hall of Fame. And I don't think anybody's arguing for Julian Edelman to be a Hall of Fame receiver. So, like,
you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised up here in New England how many people
outside of Boston, maybe. Yeah. So what I'm looking for in a Hall of Fame quarterback is obviously a long career. And I actually think in this instance, Eli's longevity has probably dented his chances. I mean, he's had six out of the last seven seasons have been losing seasons. So, and I know quarterback wins and losses are not a thing, but those wins and losses are shaped by quarterback play. And I think that's important.
Yeah.
The most damning thing I saw today was that Eli, in his own draft class, is the fourth ranked QB in terms of passing efficiency. Now, that was a draft class with Ben Roethlisberger and Philip Rivers, obviously, But Matt Schaub is ahead of him in passing efficiency.
No way.
Yes.
That was my next question. I was going to ask who the other quarterback was.
I mean, if you're behind Matt Schaub in any statistic, are you a Hall of Fame quarterback? And I just think that, I think you diminish the value of and this goes without saying, and I think this should be the starting point of any conversation. The Hall of Fame is nonsense. Like the fact that Terrell Owens had to wait as long as he did to get in just shows you what a nonsense it is. So I think we can all, well, certainly that's my opinion. You might have something different there, but I do think the fact that he would be only the second quarterback outside of Jim Plunkett. Third quarterback. I think Jim Plunkett was one, and there was one other quarterback who didn't get in with two Super Bowl wins. And I think that makes that is compelling in terms of the argument for him. Mm. I've kind of waffled for a bit there. I'd be interested in you as a Giants fan who obviously has watched this, but
yeah.
For me, it's the so many seasons of poor quarterback play. It's the fact he's never won an All Pro.
Yeah.
That's much more important than a visit to the Pro Bowl or whatever.
Yeah, of course.
There's all those things, so.
Yeah, it may be surprising to some, but I agree. I just don't think his body of work throughout the regular season, time and time again. You look at his brother Peyton, some of the numbers he was putting up consistently in the regular season were fucking off the charts. And then you take those two magical seasons away and for the most part his play was mediocre, he's kinda middle of the pack for a lot of a lot of the metrics that we judge quarterbacks by, especially the win loss one. But you said, just to play devil's advocate, you said the longer he played seemed to dent his chances. And then you hear about people saying, oh, but he's top 10 in a lot of these categories. One of them being, he's really high. I think he's in the top four for fourth quarter comebacks. He's had 27 in total. I think he had three, if you count the Super Bowl, on the road in 2007 in the Super Bowl season. And then he had two, if you count again, the Super Bowl. And that's away from home, I guess. You can count on the road in the 2011 one. But the fact that, yeah, he's been not playing great for the last few years, but he's still been kind of padding, we say Eloy is a stat padder. He's still been kind of padding those stats and just creeping his way up in certain categories to be in the top 10 for comebacks and yards and all those things. So you said the longer he's played, it's kind of dented his chances. But on the other hand, it's kind of, he's kept the stats ticking over and just topping up those numbers that he already had in some categories. But I just feel, some people are going to put him in. I honestly think he probably will end up there. Do I think he should? No, because you take away those 2 years and fuck me, what fantastic years they were. But you take away them, what has his body of work achieved? Not much. Quarterback.
100%. And even then the year, so he obviously won two Super Bowls, but the other four times he got the Giants to the playoffs, they were one and done. He basically did a Peyton on it. The record over the last few years, 5-11, 3-12, 11-5, 6-10, 6-10, 7-9.
Shocking.
In his career, ranked the quarterbacks in the NFL during that time, was he seventh? Maybe eighth out of the quarterbacks that have been in the league in that time.
Mm.
To me, he's Joe Flacco with one extra Super Bowl.
Yeah, I can see where that come from. Yeah.
At least Joe Flacco still has the deep ball to get that all those offensive pass interference yards that he loves. Eli never really had that.
Yeah.
But he's definitely lost it over the last 5 years. So.
So at least we agree on that. We don't feel Eli Manning's body of work is enough to get him in the Hall of Fame. But do you think, your personal opinion aside, do you think he may get in anyway? Because you said the Hall of Fame is a bit of a load of bullshit, with the T.O. situation. Do you think because people look on those 2 years so fondly, it's he fucking, even though the defense had a huge hand in it, he stopped those horrible New England Patriots going 19-0 and becoming only the second behind the 72 Dolphins to go undefeated. He stopped that. And then in 2011, he stopped them again. So he proved that it wasn't a fluke. That's the kind of stuff of folklore that you know, you can see people buying into it and be like, you know what, he deserves to go in. But then they're kind of looking past all the mediocrity of the regular season and all his other seasons that he didn't go far in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's worth I think it's worth noting how the Hall of Fame works. So you have to get like 80% of the votes to get in. I don't know
where the 80% is going to come from.
Yeah, I can see him getting to 50-60% because I think it's that kind of. So many people have said, "Oh, it's a coin toss," and that's it is.
Yeah.
And if you're only at 50%, like how do you get that other 30%? So I think that's where he falls down. Plus, there's the fact that, like, say the Patriots go and win the Super Bowl this year, and Brady retires this year, because I think we all expect Manning will retire at the end of the season. Say Ben gets ruled out with injury and he decides, you know what, I'm not going to put my body through another rehab. Philip Rivers retires, Drew Brees retires. Like, this is the worst case scenario for the NFL, that all these quarterbacks would retire at the same time. Like, even with that list, and we're not even talking about Aaron Rodgers in there or whatever, like, there's no way he's ahead of any of those quarterbacks.
No.
Arguably, you could put him ahead of Philip Rivers, but I think Philip Rivers actually has a better body of work as a quarterback. Maybe not in the, obviously, the hardware side of things. So they're all the reasons, I think, and it's not my opinion, but I think that's why voters will say, do you know what? Like, it's a tough thing to do to leave a quarterback with two Super Bowls out, but I think this is the case where they will.
Yeah, I can see that happening. It really is a coin toss. Like, unless, I don't know, could it be a case where he's in like a weaker class, or, you know, the numbers game comes into it, where it's like, well, you know, we need to put 7 or 8 people in. Eloy is here. The class is a little bit weak around them. Could he just get lucky in that regard? In that,
I think
there's no superstars.
You're dead right. Like, I mean, I think if he's the only kind of quarterback in the class, he's got a much better chance.
he'd want to go in. Like, if he's the only quarterback, Jesus, there must be something real bad.
I just feel like there's going to be at least one other, like, really high profile quarterback in the same draft cast, especially for year one.
Yeah.
Just, you know, your best chance of getting in is in year one.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Like, look, we're going to be having this discussion again on Paddy's Pigskin 2024 when the actual Hall of Fame stuff comes up. We'll be having this exact same chat. So.
True. Maybe I might have to put a poll up on there. I just want to gauge the public's kind of answer. So I might put a little poll up tomorrow after this episode gets released. So just curious. I think it could be, I don't know, do you reckon it could reflect their views and be a complete 50-50 coin toss?
I was just about to say that if the pro Hall of Fame vote is more than 60%, I will take a picture of myself in a Giants jersey.
Alright, I'm going to hold you to that. Right, we'll get away from the Giants. Will we talk about AB for a little bit?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Sure, why not? Yeah, he's only fucking dominated the headlines. So for now, yeah, he's still a New England Patriot. But his past behaviour is starting to catch up on him, the little divil. Zenith, they were the first ones to drop him after the whole issue about the helmet. He decided he was going to go with Zenith. They were the first to drop him. Now Nike have dropped him. Even though he hasn't been proven guilty of it, and they've just figured, look, this is too much bad PR, we're not into it. And now there's a couple of women accusing him of doing certain bad things, from California to Florida. Now, some of these I've already heard about. If you dig deep enough, you're going to see that AB is a piece of shit, and he's done some bad shit, and like, he's refused to pay people. And if you haven't read the Sports Illustrated article on him that came out a few days ago, I suggest you go and read it, because there's some juicy information in there. But it just really painted him in a bad light. And I think it's the light that he, for the most part, as a human being at least, deserves to be painted in. Because fuck me, some of the stories I read about, you know, not paying staff and then ghosting them, and then like just the way he treats women and just other humans in general, like, it's terrible. How did the Raiders just not, like, did they not bother vetting them, or they just... we're like, fuck it, we're hiring him to be a football player, and yeah, if he's a piece of shit, whatever, we'll deal with that if we cross that bridge. Like, you know, someone like Mike Mayock, his job is to evaluate players. Like, that's what he's been doing for so long when he worked on NFL Network. How did all that just slip through the net and he ended up getting signed?
Yeah, it's like, for me, I think it was such a low-risk deal for the Raiders, as has been proven, because it cost them nothing in terms of draft picks.
Now, I didn't know when they signed him that there was that clause saying if he behaved with conduct detrimental to the team that they could cut him with no guaranteed losses. I didn't know. Yeah. Like, did you know that was in the contract? I had no idea that was there.
I think it's something that the players are keen to get out of the next collective bargaining agreement, but it does exist, yeah. And it exists for this reason, is because teams sometimes take a flyer on a player who's
questionable character.
An issue. Look, the NFL is full of absolutely questionable characters. And that's why this kind of type of clause exists in a contract. There's no point in touching the crimes that he's accused of, because obviously it's a legal issue, and even though it's going through a civil court and stuff like that, I think just the fact that, you know, he has this record of leaving unpaid, often women, often much significantly poorer than the multimillionaire footballer, in his wake, and the way he treats people, like that doc, like that Sports Illustrated story, Google it after this podcast, because it's a wild ride. Like, I mean, farting in the face of a doctor who was examining, like, these are not the actions of a nice human being. Mm. And to be honest, like, you know, I was a little uncomfortable with the amount of kind of, it's bad enough when people are diagnosing concussion on Twitter because of a hit they see in a game, but when they start diagnosing CTE in someone, it's like, it made me really uncomfortable. Sometimes people can just be arseholes. And I've always said like that, like, you know, I'm someone who struggled with my mental health, but my issues with mental health don't give me an excuse to be a dickhead.
Yeah.
And you know, there is a level of behavior that is acceptable as a human being. And if someone dips below that, I think regardless of why they're dipping below that, we have a right to call them out on it. And I think he's rightfully being called out on it. I think, like, he had a lot. Initially, people were like, do you know, and for me, I would be a big player power person. I would be, you know, the teams have too much power still. I mean, like, there, a lot of players are well rewarded, but a lot of players aren't well rewarded. Like, I mean, the average NFL contract is a lot different than those big superstar contracts that you see. You know, your kicker, your first year kicker is probably struggling to pay his mortgage. You know, that kind of way. Like, yeah. But he's still susceptible to the same fucking injuries as your star quarterback, who you're paying guaranteed $84 million a year or whatever.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, like, you know, people that may not be fully invested in the NFL as a fan may not understand. They just see all these massive contracts, and then all you have to do is go on to Over the Cap or Spot Track or whatever cap related website you may use, and like you said, some of the lads at the bottom of the totem pole there, like, if they get a 10 or 15 grand fine or something, that's a fucking big chunk of their paycheck. It makes things very difficult for them to pay for stuff, like, whatever it may be, where they're living or their mode of transportation or whatever it is. Like, not every player is like Aaron Rodgers or Kirk Cousins making 28 to 30 million a year. A lot of guys are just, we say, oh, they're still getting like 200-300 grand, but, you know, they're putting their bleeding body and mind on the line and brain when they're playing this sport.
And to me, like, you know, the fact that the Patriots of all teams, to me, the biggest issue here is with Brown is, and it can never be proven, and that's the biggest, like, how do you prove anything like this? This was inevitable. We all knew that Antonio Brown was going to end up with the Patriots. Why did we all? because it's like, he engineered his way out of Oakland. Like, and people will say, oh, well, why would you give up the $30 million guaranteed or whatever? I'll tell you why you gave it up, because you get a chance to win the Super Bowl. You're not going to win a Super Bowl with the Raiders. You know, the Raiders, regardless of Antonio Brown being on the field, the Raiders were going 7-9, 8-8, or 9-7 this year, guaranteed, with Antonio Brown on the field or not. Like, a quarter, like, if you look at the metric, a wide receiver, a number one wide receiver, even one as good as Antonio Brown is, and I think when he's playing well, he is the best receiver in the NFL, they're worth less than one win a season.
Wow.
Like, they don't, one wide receiver can't influence the team. And he probably knew that as well. And, like, the Steelers were never going to trade him to the Patriots.
Yeah.
I was surprised they even traded him in conference, to be honest. I thought they'd get him to the NFC. You know, they may only have to come across him in the Super Bowl or whatever. And to me, like, there are a lot of ways to exercise your power as a player, and I just don't know if being a dickhead is the right approach to it. And that was but that just seems like the type of person he is.
Yeah. What worries me now is, like, we don't know. I don't think personally that he was smart enough to concoct this social media campaign, like, to get released. I don't know. I think he was just being an absolute shitebag, and the Raiders just had enough. Whether he had it planned or not, like, that remains to be seen. But for me, I think this is starting to set a dangerous precedent, because now you're going to have players that are going to be trying to force their way off teams by being drama queens. And you're already starting to see the knock-on domino effect of what AB was up to, maybe to a lesser extent. But still, like, you have Jalen Ramsey now. He's already, like, he's basically saying, I want to be traded. I don't want to be on this team anymore. He's going to be playing tonight. Whether he sees a high amount of snaps or not remains to be seen. But he's on the roster at least for the game against the Titans. Like, shit's not going his way now in Jacksonville. Foles has gone down. He's like, nah, I don't want to be on this fucking team anymore. And now Jamal Adams, like, he's been a bit more cryptic about it. He's, like, unfollowing the Jets on social media. He's removed any reference to the Jets from his biography and stuff, just because the Jets season, as we kind of expected, is going down the toilet as well. Like, our players going to be coming out now, seeing what AB has done. It's like, well, this guy just got himself traded away or released, and now he's with the team that's more than likely going to be going to the playoffs or going to the Super Bowl from the AFC side of things. Like, is it setting a dangerous precedent now for other guys to be like, you know what, I can get myself traded or released and join a contender if this is what I want, if we just act up a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think what's broken is that that's the way they have to act to get the trade, if you know what I mean. I'm all for, like, you know, if I'm Minka Fitzpatrick, like, what the fuck would I want to stay around the Dolphins? Like, do you know what I mean?
That's fair,
like,
enough.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, so I think that, like, I completely agree with you that, like, if acting up or you know, basically being a dickhead, I keep coming back to that point, is not the way to do it. But I'm also all for player movement, because I think the league and the teams have wielded too much. Like, the franchise tag is an absolute nonsense. Like, if it basically says it gives the teams the power not to pay a player what is worth and not to let that player go to somewhere where they paid what they're worth. So
it's crazy.
There are issues. So there are two parts to this. There's one, yeah, you don't want to see players acting like that, but I also have some sympathy for players who are in a situation where they're like, you know what, this team does not have my best interest in heart. I have a very limited career. I have an opportunity. A team who can win something wants to pay me what I think I'm worth. I would like to go to them. I just feel like that there needs to be more of mechanisms for players being able to move.
Yeah.
Like, so it's a bigger issue than just that, but I completely agree with you. This whole thing about unfollowing your team on social media. Like, I mean, that's how people twigged that Antonio Brown was leaving the Raiders, because he unfollowed Derek Carr on Instagram.
Yeah.
Like, imagine you've gone to fucking journalism college, you've done a master's, you've done years of fucking really hard graft, and your editor says to you, oh, you have set up a list to see who's following you on Instagram and Twitter. Like, this is the nonsense that we live in, like, in 2019.
It's shocking. So, just to boil down your point is, like, you totally agree with players, you know, there should be mechanisms of players to be able to request to move teams and be like, this isn't the right place for me, but just be sound about it. Don't be a cunt about things.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, the Jag situation with Ramsey, I think is that he does not feel like that team is using him in the best way possible, is treating him as good. Like, he is their best player on defense. But he's been made to play a role that he's not obviously comfortable with playing at the moment. He disagrees with the coaching.
Which is, in fairness, that's a Minka Fitzpatrick. That was his situation as well. Like, he was drafted out of Alabama to be a safety/cornerback, and now in Flores' system, you know, and Flores didn't draft him. Like, he was only he's only the coach there this year. So, like, he's now finding himself in a system where Flores is using him all these different ways, and he wasn't brought to the Dolphins to be that type of player. So you can understand in those circumstances, it's like, look, like, if you're in soccer, if you're brought in, like, there's, I'm sure we've, I'm not too in tune with the Premier League these days, but I'm sure there's been issues where a player has been brought in to be like a centre midfielder or something, and then he ends up finding himself like wing forward or something. It's like, hang on a second, I wasn't brought in to play this role.
Absolutely, and I think that's really fair. But what I don't agree with is going like, because it's the only mechanism they have at the moment, that's why the players are taking this approach.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, I feel like the system just needs to be overhauled, like, to give players that bit more freedom of movement. Because, like, let's face it, like, if your employer turned around to you and said, oh, you can't take that job offer because we own your contract, like, it doesn't exist in any world outside of sports. So I have no idea why it exists in sports, you know? Yeah,
and in fairness to the Dublin Rebels, they allowed me to activate my release clause and join Trinity College. So that's the way it should be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take a leaf out of the IFL's book. We won't go into that anymore. Right, we'll finish off a little bit about something which, me personally, I haven't seen the likes of it, and that is the Dolphins just absolutely fucking tanking. Like, where do we start? My God, there's just, every week it seems like they're doing something else where it's just like they're trading away all the pieces, and like they're just completely gutting the roster. Like, have you seen, can you remember in recent history in the NFL, can you remember seeing anything remotely close to what's going on down in Miami?
No, we're in completely uncharted territory. I'm stunned by how blatant it is. You could, you know, people always say, oh, could Clemson beat, you know, this NFL, whoever has won the most recent college football title, they'll always say, could they beat the worst team in the NFL? And, you know, it's a ridiculous argument because, of course, they couldn't. These are 53 professionals. But you know what?
They'd be close. Because, like, how many Clemson players were, like, it's got to be double figures, the amount of Clemson players that were drafted in the first two rounds, I would say. Because, like, you had a load of deep. Is it 10?
I think it was 10, yeah. I can't be 100% sure on that now, but yeah, I think
they
so.
Didn't they have three defensive linemen in the first round, wasn't it? Because they had Dexter Lawrence for the Giants, they had Cleland Farrell to your Raiders. Yeah. There was one other now that I've totally forgotten his name, but like, there's three defensive linemen alone. Now, can you look at that Miami Dolphins roster and be like, there's 53 players that are, you know, top seven round draftable material? Like, I don't know, some of them could be like undrafted guys. I don't know the exact breakdown, but Jesus, I'd say Clemson would give them a decent run for their money. If you look at how they're playing, they've totally given up.
Yeah, no, I think you're Dexter Lawrence, wasn't it? Chris Wilkins and Farrell.
So there's three defensive linemen alone from the one program, the first round.
Yeah. Yeah, like, to me, there's talk today, so I don't know if when people will be listening to this, probably Friday their time, but there's talk on Thursday about, like, the competition committee looking at this. But what can you do? I don't think you can bring in the NBA style where you're not guaranteed the number one pick just because you have the fewest wins. I've always felt that it would be amazing to have some sort of, like, the two teams with the worst record having to play at the end of the season, like, in almost in, you know, the Pro Bowl week. Pro Bowl. Yeah, for the number one pick. And you have to win it to get the number one pick. Like, I'd love that. Yeah. Because it's real football, not like the Pro Bowl, flag rubbish. I think you then are forcing a team like to not completely gut their roster. Do you know what I mean? So say you know, the Dolphins, that the first step we realized that they were tanking was when they just basically cleared the deck. And what's going to happen is that, we know what they're doing. They're going after Tua. And, you know, nothing says we're going after a left-handed quarterback than by getting rid of your former number one first-round pick left tackle, because you know that he, you know, the right tackle is now going to be more important or whatever. But like, what's the point in having Tua if he's got fucking you and me to throw the ball to? Like, it, or even worse, you or me protecting him.
I'll be fucking like, chop blocking all day. That's all I could do.
So like, there is no evidence to say that this will work, because what the Browns did is the right way to go about tanking. Accumulate those number one or those first round picks, but be still bad enough to be picking in the top five at the same time.
Yeah.
But like, while I'm saying we've never seen the likes of it, if I'm the New York Jets, I can still get the number one overall pick. You know, the Jets have their quarterback, right?
Yeah.
So here's, imagine this scenario. So the Jets have their quarterback. They don't need Tua. They have an opportunity to influence this because they play the Dolphins twice.
Yeah.
They lose both those games. No matter what happens, they would have the number one pick over the Dolphins. So
huge then leverage.
All these picks that the Dolphins are accumulating, well, then they're going to give them all to the Jets, and suddenly the Jets are a much better franchise. Like, so, you know, if I'm the GM of the Jets, I'm giving Sam Darnold a call and saying, I don't think that mono's any better. You know, I think you should probably stay at home an extra couple of weeks, you know?
Lick a few more toilet seats there now while you're at it and come back to us.
Jesus Christ. Mono, like, who goes out with mono?
Gingers with those souls. I mean,
but this is, and do you know what the worst part of all this is? The fucking AFC East gifting the Patriots another title.
Stop. Like, don't get me started.
People going on about, oh, well, don't sleep on the Bills. They're 2-0. Yeah, they played the Giants and the Jets. Of course they're 2-0.
Ask my bollocks. It's just every year it's a fucking cakewalk. Like, there's just, how about we get the competition committee on that? The fucking AFC East is an absolute shambolic division. But just to go back to the amount of stockpiling, so people may not be aware, like, how much exactly that the Dolphins have stockpiled. 3 first-rounders. So they got the Texans and the Steelers ones through the whole Laramie Tunsil and then Minka Fitzpatrick trades. And then Kenny Stills as well. 2 second-rounders. A third, a fifth, 2 sixths and a seventh. But then, you may forget, they've got 4 picks in the first 2 rounds in 2021. So here's a scenario for you. They've stockpiled 1st-rounders in 2021 as well. Does that say to you that, just in case they draft Tua and he's a fucking disaster, they're ready to pull the trigger on Lawrence when he comes out with Clemson? Or am I looking into it too much?
No, I think you're right. I think anyone looking at Tua, and I think Tua is a fantastic quarterback. I think he's incredibly exciting. I think he can definitely be a franchise changing quarterback. But I think everyone can see that Lawrence is the better player. If you'd hope that every single team is doing their due diligence to make sure that, look, if we're not challenging in next, if we don't think we're going to be challenging next year,
yeah,
it'd be shit enough to get Lawrence.
I can't remember what GM it was, but someone said, like, you should draft a quarterback every year, no matter what, because you just never know. Take a quarterback, like, even if it looks like you don't need a quarterback, just take one, because you just never know what's going to happen, and at least you may be able to develop a quarterback. Fuck it, even if he's in like the 5th or 6th round, you just never know. Like Stidham, the Auburn quarterback last year that the Pats got, like, he actually looks pretty decent. What round did he get him? 4th or 5th or something like that?
4th, I think, wasn't it? Yeah, and look, the best quarterback we've ever seen play the game was drafted in the 6th round. Yeah. You never know what you're going to get. And I think that's, so like, yeah, like, look, we all thought Andrew Luck was a surefire, like, guaranteed Super Bowl winning quarterback, and look, he's gone. He's not even playing the sport anymore. So there's no guarantee that just because you get that quarterback who looks brilliant coming out of college, that they're going to live up to that billing.
RG3, the injuries that the Redskins just, the amount of punishment he got just fucked him, like, you know, so you just never know.
Like Cam Newton, the Panthers thought Cam Newton was going to be good for another 10 years. He might not survive this year. Like, you know, like,
I think it's the headscarves. There's something about those headscarves that he's wearing. Like, he looks like he's selling apple and oranges down in fucking Moore Street or something with that thing on his head. Like,
Amy said he looks like Mrs. Doyle offering someone a cup of tea.
Go on.
I think like I don't think there's anything the league can do about this. The only people who can affect this are the Jets. The Jets can save us all from the Dolphins doing this. But having seen them through two games, the Dolphins they can't win a game. Now they've put Josh Rosen in as starting quarterback. Why?
And he nearly got hurt scrambling on, I think it was third or fourth down. He was trying to scramble like out of bounds and he nearly fucked up his knee. His knee nearly got like hyperextended. Yeah. And I was like, that is just the most 2019 Dolphins play ever. Ryan Fitzpatrick's out, Rosen comes in, tries to do too much on a nothing play and nearly fucks up his knee. I'm like, I can't anymore with this Dolphins team. Can't even. It's just too much for me now.
It's no NFL game in week three should have a point spread of more than three touchdowns.
22.5, I think it is, isn't it? 20. Yeah, it's either the Dolphins are 22.5 dogs or the Jets. I think it's the first time since I read some stat there during the week. Might be the first time since 1972 or something that two teams have been over 20-point underdogs in the NFL. Crazy.
Insane. Absolutely insane.
And then, of course, they're both AFC East teams.
Of course, they are.
just how we drew it up.
Yeah, a shit show of a division and has been for, the best part of 20 years. And also, I think this weekend, is there something 16 quarterbacks, 26 and under? Seeing that golden age of quarterbacks is definitely drawing to a close. And you've guys that how do they have starting jobs in the NFL and Colin Kaepernick sitting at home? You just go, definitely not being blackballed. It's definitely a talent thing, all right.
Do you reckon the likes of Lamar and Mahomes can become that next golden era of quarterbacking, or is it just basically the two? We haven't really seen much of Kyler Murray so far, but is it right now, is it just that group of Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, and then we'll see how everybody else develops?
Yeah, I think those two stand out so much. Mahomes is undoubtedly the best quarterback, young quarterback I have ever seen. He is unbelievably good, and it absolutely sickens me that he plays in the same division as the team I support. But you know what? The Raiders played well against him for three quarters. But yeah. Even that wasn't enough. One quarter did all the damage. There was one of the touchdowns where he threw off his back foot, kind of a sidearm throw, and I think it went 47 yards up through the air like a fucking rocket. And it's just amazing to watch him play. He's 100% going to throw a behind the back pass this year, guaranteed.
the whip on the torque he's able to get. I'd say some of that is from his alpha was a baseball player, right? Yeah. I'd say just growing up just playing a bit of softball myself, I've learned how proper throwing mechanics really involves kind of whipping your body in through the hips. And I'd say that's just throwing so many baseballs over the years, has given them that, little bit of a knack, I guess, of throwing it on the run or having to torque his body and throw a sidearm. Some of the things he does is absolutely incredible.
No, it's so good to watch. And my only concern for the Chiefs is they're going all in on him because obviously he's on a rookie deal and they can afford to spend a lot of money now because they don't have to pay him.
Yeah, that's true.
He's going to become expensive very quickly. You're probably whatever they're paying Russell Wilson, they could double it for Patrick Mahomes. And it still wouldn't be what his actual value is to that team.
Well, I think we're seeing that now, right? Anyway, where the trend in NFL teams is to load up on talent, surround your rookie deal quarterback with talent, and just go all in for those 2 or 3 years before he's asking for an extension, and then cross that bridge when you get to it.
Absolutely, but it's kind of mad to think that we live in a league where the Mitchell Trubisky could play Patrick Mahomes in a Super Bowl. When one is a real quarterback and I don't know what the other one is. But it just goes to show there's two such vastly different approaches to the sport that could end up with the same result. And I think that's that's what makes it so compelling to see these the teams that have decided that, look, this is the guy we're going to build our team around because he's a great quarterback. And the other teams that have gone, do you know what, let's just load our defense. Let's be, you know, really hard to score against.
Well, sure. Look, Steve, we're able to see a quarterback last year that got to a Super Bowl that doesn't even know how to read a fucking defense. He has his head coach in his ear until the mics get cut, and he's reading the defense for him.
It's not a great look when you have to do that. But do you know what? It's been really that's, and I know we're probably running out of time, but it's been also really interesting. I'd say there's a lot of GMs who've hired Sean McVay kind of clones. We're a little bit worried. Because the league is kind of catching on to what the Rams are doing. And there's a very good chance that the Rams don't. I know they've started the season okay, but they haven't looked good. And there's a very good chance they don't get out of that division because 49ers started the season well, the Seahawks have started the season well, and both look better than the Rams have done. And I think this is the risk of you can have a great coach, you can have a great defense, but if you can't trust your quarterback, this sport is dominated by great quarterback.
Yeah.
And if you can't trust him to kind of read a defense, or you can't trust him to score more 3 points in a Super Bowl, do you really have a team? And that's a big question that the Rams and Rams fans are going to have to kind of face.
Yeah, absolutely. Will we leave it at that, Steve? My little labradoodle's coming in here giving me the eyes as if, get the fuck off that microphone, so... Well,
I think that makes a lot of sense.
And you've seen Barney's eyes, by the way, so you know how he looks at me.
Sadness in his eyes, you know. I just like to say that I think just very briefly on the Raiders.
Fire away.
Yeah, just very very briefly. I actually think that Mike Mayock nailed that draft, and I think he got a lot of criticism at the time. But Farrell has played really well. Abrams was outstanding in the Broncos game until he got hurt, and unfortunately he's going to miss the rest of the year. And Jacobs looks to be a phenomenal talent at running back. So, you know,
you're happy.
There's something the Raiders have played 7 good quarters of football this year and are 1-1. The Packers have played 1 good quarter of football and are 2-0. So it's like this is a strange league. It's like fantasy football. It's all about matchups. And
really,
unfortunately, that quarter was against Patrick Mahomes. Like, but so I'm as long term listeners will know, like, I've always been pessimistic about the Raiders, but I'm actually weirdly optimistic about where it's going at the moment.
Cautiously optimistic.
That's probably the best,
because you know the wheels can fall off at any time, and historically they have, so you're cautiously optimistic of the Raiders.
Yes, that was probably the best thing, because inevitably, like, the stadium will burn down at some stage.
Exactly. Well, on that baseball field, all it needs is a slight little bit of tinder and the whole place is going to go up.
Yeah, and that was the last game we'll ever see with a baseball infield during an NFL game.
It was shocking. It was shocking to watch that, but I got a little bit of a kick out of it as well. It just looks so weird, but I kind of enjoyed it at the same time. I'm sure the players didn't enjoy it, but
oh no, like it's not crack. Like, you know yourself what you know. If you go from one type of surface to another, your footing automatically kind of gives way from underneath you.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
It's not great.
I've been spoiled over here playing on AstroTurf, and then when I went home to play in the summer there. Now, fair play to the Wexford Eagles. They had a really good setup there. I'm not going to slate them for that. But it was just so weird playing on, like, perfect 5G Astro, going back playing on grass. I'm like, I'm not able for this. I've been too spoiled. So I can see where the players are coming from.
100%.
All right, Steve. Thanks. I know it's getting quite late over there now in Ireland. It's, what, 11:30 or so. So I'll let you go. Thanks very much for coming on to Paddy Pigskins. Great having you on. Do you want to give another quick... brief shout out your Medium? It's medium.com. Search for Steve O'Rourke and you'll find all your articles. Yeah,
well, can I be really cheeky and do a second shout out? So
yeah.
I've obviously started coaching in the Irish American Football League again, a rival of your beloved Dublin Rebels in the West Dublin Rhinos. We'll be looking for new players kind of towards the end of October, so if anyone was interested, Steve O'Rourke on Twitter, hit me up and I can sort you out.
That was very bold, but I'll allow it. Because you're a good friend of mine.
I didn't I didn't even tell you I was going to do that because I knew it was so bold.
And you also know I don't edit and know this podcast as well, so I was going to go into it at the end. All right, Steve, good night. Thanks very much for coming on. Pleasure to chat to you as always about everything NFL.
You too. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, dude. Leaving it with me and my dogs, trapping out the Four Seasons way. Need no rhyme and no reason, seen it right before my eyes. Dudes get locked and go treason, I can't switch up on my guys. For them I'ma go demon shorty, say she love my fly. Hope that's not the dope speaking way. Hope that's not the dope speaking, no. Yeah. Every season my season, every season my season, man, as long as I'm breathing. Every season my season, every season my season, man, as long as I'm breathing. Every, yeah. Every season my season, every season my season, man, as long as I'm breathing. Every season my season, every season my season, man, as long as I'm breathing. Every. Pulled off, skirt fast. Try to get it, instead of hating like a dirt bag. Shit's much bigger than debating about who's first last. It's about getting all this bread before your dirt nap. You looking like the worst trash. First class is on the bag, pocket full of cash. Blunt's ash, living fast, just look at the dash. I'm just trying to make it last, it go in the flash. Every season my season, every season my season, man, as long as I'm breathing. Every season my season, every season my season, man, as long as I'm breathing. Every. Every season my season, every season my season, man, as long as I'm breathing. Every season my season, yeah. Man, as long as I'm breathing.